This episode is sponsored by Tunbridge Accountants. Are you a creative entrepreneur looking for financial support? Do you need clarity around your numbers or help with decisions related to your business finances? Do you even know what all the numbers mean? Before I worked with Tunbridge Accountants, I definitely didn't. Wendy and Lawton are not just accountants, they're your partners in navigating the complexities of business finance. They make VAT, corporation tax, cash flow management, all of this really simple, guiding you through all the decisions you need to make, whether that's a company purchase, setting up a new business, whether to register as a business. Wendy and Lawton can give you really honest, practical advice on everything. And by letting them take care of your business finances, it then frees you up to focus on what you do best, creating and selling your products. So thank you again to Tunbridge Accountants for sponsoring this podcast.
Welcome to the Bring Your Product Ideas to Life podcast. Practical advice and inspiration to help you create and sell your own physical products. Here's your host, Vicky Weinberg.
Today, I'm delighted to have Cara Benden joining us on the podcast. Cara is a branding specialist with 13 years experience who's created over 60 brands for entrepreneurs and small businesses and has helped hundreds more via branding workshops. Cara's worked with both national brands and early stage startups, and she says she firmly believes every small business can use the same techniques as household names to establish themselves. So as you might have guessed, we're going to be talking branding and all things brand and everything that involves today. It's such a fantastic episode. Hopefully Cara and myself give you a lot of context about what your brand is and isn't, maybe, and where your brand is visible. There's certainly like lots of new information for me in there, so I hope there is for you too. And then we also talk through some really practical things you can do when it comes to establishing your brand or maybe thinking about your brand in more detail if you have one already. So I really hope this is going to be a really useful and practical episode, and I'd love to introduce you to Cara.
So hi, Cara. Thank you for being here.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Can you please start by giving an introduction to yourself, your business, and what it is that you do, please?
Yes. So I'm a branding consultant, and since 2013, I have been working with startups and entrepreneurs and small businesses to create brands that are effective for their businesses. And before that, I worked in ad agencies. And I was working on big brands like The Times, Super Nanny, and luxury hotel brands. But I felt that I was much more passionate about using what I'd learned there, the principles that are used for big brands for helping small businesses. So that's what I turned my hand to. And I've been doing that for over 8 years now.
Well, thank you for that introduction. And I want to start right at the beginning, so this might be a really obvious question, Cara, but what is branding and what does branding include? Because I'm thinking logos and colours, but I'm sure there's a lot more to it than that. So can you talk us through that, please?
Yeah, no, that's absolutely fine. It's a good place to start. So I often use the analogy of an iceberg. And branding are all of the aspects that you might see that are visible. So it would be your logo, the brand colors, the fonts, anything like any graphics or photography that's used to do with the business, any social media templates or graphics, that would all, and packaging, that would all fall under branding. It's all of the visible stuff. And then brand is what's beneath the surface. And the job of branding is to reflect that. So what's beneath the surface is your brand values, your tone of voice, your mission, who you serve, your USP. So effective branding uses these visual things. So it might just seem like a bit of design, but actually, if you do it well, you're using your branding to express all of these things about what your company's about.
That makes sense, because I know that I've looked having like logos made before, and I know I've been asked questions like, what personality does your brand have? And I guess, is that why somebody right. would be asking? Because they're trying to get a sense of what That's you want it. To reflect.
Exactly. So that could be really difficult to answer just off the bat if somebody asks you that when you're going to get a logo done. But really, it's because, a logo is just sort of a drawing, but really for it to be useful for your business and to help attract the right customers, it should be able to really understand your business and help you stand out within your marketplace. So that's why it's really valuable actually to understand a lot of these things about your competitors and your ideal customer and where you might fall in the midst of both of those things before you go and get any branding done, because then you really understand where you're trying to sit and your graphic designer can translate that into the graphics.
That makes sense. So I guess it's about knowing what your brand makeup is before working on the actual visual stuff. Have I got that right?
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, that stuff can be tricky, but I think a lot of really good brand designers, they take you through that process. You know, if they're experienced in working with brands, then they will hold your hand through that so that it doesn't feel like you have to have written an essay before you even consider your branding. It's just that branding is quite subliminal, and in terms of, and that's why it can be so powerful, in terms of the fact that it can just appeal, certain brands can just appeal to us if they are designed to cater for our kind of target audience. And obviously when you're setting up a business, you want your customers to be attracted to your brand.
That makes sense. Thank you. And so a brand designer would help you through that. So if someone's listening now and they're thinking, oh, I need to think about my branding, they don't necessarily have to have done all of this now. That's something that they will be able to get help with going forward. Is that right?
Yeah, definitely. But I think, you know, I always try and share loads of tips on my social media as well, especially on my Instagram. And I have a lot of like carousel posts with more information, or IGTVs, like short videos that just ask some of the questions, because sometimes it's just a matter of putting that question in your mind and letting it mull for a little while, just so that you have given that some thought before you go ahead. It can be really beneficial.
Thank you. And I'll make sure we link up to your Instagram in the show notes. People can go over and take a look at that, because, yeah, I know that you do some really helpful posts. It's just good, as you say, to start thinking about some of these things.
Exactly.
So before we go into a few more details about sort of the makeup of a brand, it would be good to just know, why do you think you need a strong brand? Why is a strong brand important? And where is your brand even visible to people?
So it's because we buy from hundreds and thousands of different brands in the course of a month or a year, and we are constantly seeing different things. But we, you know, in amidst all the noise, it's those brands that we basically know, like, and trust that we will gravitate towards. And if you think about it, if you ever bought something from a company and they were quite good and you're trying to tell a friend, what you're hoping is you're trying to remember their name because you want to tell them, or you might remember something like, oh, they had yellow packaging or whatever it was, and that might help trigger you to remember what it was. So that's really what you're trying to do, is create some kind of a latch for people to be able to remember you by, because a lot of the time when you are a small business, you don't have the kind of the toolkit and resources of these bigger brands that have been around for a long time. But a lot of people do still want to support you. And I think even, you know, if anybody's trying a brand that isn't one of the really, really big famous brands that everyone uses day in, day out, then it's just trying to shortcut that process of remembering you so people can tell others and so that they can buy from you again. If you just even think, I've done it loads of times, you start typing a URL or a handle on Instagram because there was something you liked that you saw, and you just have that moment where you try to remember it. And so branding can be really helpful because it uses things like color psychology and shape, which in quite clever ways. So sorry, that sounded a bit overcomplicated, but basically the human brain, we read color and form much faster than we read any words. So the thing like having a particular shape logo or a strong brand color that will help your brand be remembered, especially if it is in contrast with your competitors in a particular marketplace. So I think that's why it's important, because it's all just about trying to, you know, people have, if they bought from you and they like it, it's just about trying to get it so that you're remembered in a part of their brain, and so they can go back to you or they can tell others. And that's basically what we're all trying to do.
And so it's about standing out and being memorable, I guess.
Absolutely, yeah. And I mean, obviously it is about communicating some of those things that are unique about your brand, but at a really basic level, it's trying to remember. It's like, I remember Selfridges did a campaign some years ago where they sold products without the brand name on, and so you'd have like a jar. It was clearly a Marmite jar, you know, the brown jar with the yellow lid and the red and yellow on its label, but without the brand name, everyone knew what it was. And that just means that it's because it's almost hardwired for us to see that. And I think, you know, if you think about that when you're in the supermarket, that's why a lot of supermarkets use their own brand. They imitate very closely the major brand, and it's because, and sometimes you can come home with the brand you didn't want because they basically played in on that subliminal color and form thing, and you've picked up one and realized it wasn't the brand you wanted. So I think, you know, that just shows the power of using these kind of quite basic building blocks to make you memorable. And in terms of where it's seen, it's basically any aspect of your business. So it could be, you know, if you are a product business and you're selling online, then it would be what we would call in marketing touch points. So that's just any point in which the consumer might come into contact with your brand. So that could be a social media ad. It could be your Facebook or Instagram page. It could be your Twitter if you have a customer service on there. It would be obviously your website, or if you were selling through a third party, it would be any banners or graphics that you have on that site. And then obviously it would be things like your packaging and, you know, any tissue paper or stickers, any emails with confirmation that you send through. So they're all just opportunities to continue like building up that brand presence.
That makes sense, thank you. And I guess it can seem a little bit overwhelming, all the things you have to think about. But then I guess on the other side, if you've already made the decisions about I use these fonts and these colours and this style of graphics, I guess it probably makes it easier if you are looking to create a social media post or anything, or a, you know, an insert for a product or anything like that. If you've already have made those decisions about actually this is what it looks like, this is the style, because yeah, it can seem, I guess, a bit much. And before we move on, actually, when you're talking about the supermarket, a story came to mind. It's a very old story that I had from a friend that used to work in a major supermarket years ago, who told me that their own brand products in that supermarket, they had two different sort of styles of packaging. They had like one that was white with literally just black text pretty much saying what the product was, and then they had another own brand style of packaging which was sort of looked nicer and more like some of the big brands, and they were priced differently. But my friend assured me that the actual product was inside the tin, for example, was completely the same, but they could charge more for the one that looked more premium.
Isn't that interesting? Yeah, I had always thought that there probably was a difference between the products when it's something like that, but that just goes to show, doesn't it? I know similar as well, that you know, many moons ago I actually worked in retail, and I remember that there was one supplier that used to come and provide all of the accessories for all of the shops. So I think, yes, a lot is wrapped up in brand. It's why I mean, this is an extreme example, but Tiffany's, they sell what is basically, it's a bookmark, but it's shaped like a paperclip, and they sell it for, I can't quite remember now, but it's well over £100. They have one version that's silver and one version that's gold, and the gold version is really expensive. And it's really done the rounds as a bit of a viral thing of, you know, if Tiffany's can sell a paperclip for $300, then you're worth more type thing. But what's interesting is obviously they can, first, obviously it's a bookmark, not a paperclip, it's a novelty item, but it's totally true. If a new business created a bookmark and silver that was that price point, it's unlikely to be as financially successful. And it's the same reason why, you know, Gucci and other brands like that can sell basic plain white t-shirts that just got screen printed versions of their logos on. They're not embroidered, they're not using precious materials or anything like that. And they have a price point that is, you know, 10 to 15 times higher than you would generally spend on an item of that description. It's because, you know, brand really matters. In, you know, in those instances, maybe celebrities or you know, the brand history, like for Tiffany, you know, Breakfast at Tiffany's is obviously quite iconic. And then Tiffany's is linked with milestones. You might get a locket necklace, or you might get you might buy a baby a silver rattle, or you might get an engagement ring there. So because they're so connected with milestones, they're a very aspirational brand. And in the case of, you know, some of these designer labels, a lot of celebrities wear them, including rappers and things like that. So it's really kind of increased their street appeal. So it goes to show that your brands can really dictate these things. And on a, you know, for a small business, you're not going to be a Gucci or a Tiffany to begin with, but it does, you can be a premium small business as well. And I think that's really important. I actually was helping a jeweler recently, and she was massively underpricing her items because she was a single person business and it was a confidence issue. But what we had to look at was that basically while her items were good quality, the brand and the website were not at the right level for her to be able to charge those prices. So actually, in taking that journey to level up her branding so that it looked premium enough, she could create that impression that it was good quality pieces and step away from it seeming so amateur, and therefore increase her prices to what they really ought to be.
Yeah, that really makes sense. And I'm kind of hearing, and I don't know if this is entirely the case, that if you're looking to sell luxury or premium items, then you're, I mean, obviously brand is always important, but it's possibly even more important that your brand reflects the fact that it's, so your branding reflects the fact that your brand is premium and luxury.
Absolutely.
I can see how small things can really make a difference. With my, I wouldn't say that my own products were premium or luxury, but they are very good quality and therefore slightly higher price. Mm-hmm. And I remember going back years, I saw a difference when I improved the packaging for my first products. When I first launched it, the packaging looked good, but the actual physical material that it was made of wasn't great. Mm-hmm. And for the second production run, I just changed the material from which the packaging was made of. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden it looked like so much more, I wouldn't say more expensive, but it looked it looked more like it was worth the price tag because the packaging suddenly like elevated it, if that makes any sense. And I really Absolutely. Saw an increase in sales then, because I think before people Brilliant. Maybe thought, well, that looks good, but I want to give it, it was like a gifting item. And I could see that people would think, well, if the packaging isn't great, maybe they don't. Well, I mean, I've done that before. I bought something for someone online and looked at the packaging, and then you're a bit like, oh, I almost don't want to give it as a gift because it doesn't look good.
I think that's such an interesting and important insight. If you realize that your products are being bought by people for gifting, then that is a really big part of it. And it doesn't have to be your base cost. If you want to keep costs down, it can always be an add-on that you you know, that you have a gift packaging. But people do want to be able, especially the convenience of sometimes we want to be able to order direct from the website to the person. I think that's really important. And I think that's really interesting. In terms of the point you said about whether it's more premium or luxury businesses that need to concentrate more on their branding, I think yes, to some extent, I would agree. I mean, there's just no way of getting around it. If you have a luxury item with a high price point and you go for cheap branding, it's going to look cheap. You know, the phrase, you know, you get what you pay for, is so true when it comes to this field of branding and design, because there's a lot of people who know how to use some basic design tools, even just, you know, online ones or Creative Cloud Suite. But then there's a huge difference between people who can pull a few shapes and fonts together and somebody who has been on the journey with a few brands and understands the questions to ask and how to make you differentiated from your audience. So But even with, so I, you know, some people ask me who doesn't need a brand. And I would say if you're competing at price always and you're always going to be the cheapest, then okay, your brand, you need some kind of brand so people can remember you. But yes, okay, then you don't need to spend so much. But I'd say that for any small business, it's not really a great aspiration to want to be at the bottom of the barrel. And so wherever you are, it doesn't, branding doesn't mean that you suddenly look expensive. Branding reflects exactly what your brand is. And if your brand is really friendly, warm and accessible, it will reflect that. But just like in your case, nobody wants to take a risk on something that maybe doesn't look quite as good quality. So it's actually, you know, your product is you think that your product is enough to sell your business, but actually people require the whole picture, you know, a strong brand and, you know, as well as a good product. So, you know, I know I've seen in reviews things like, oh, I was looking for some headphones. It was like, you know, these headphones seem pretty good. You know, the packaging didn't come with any instructions, didn't come with a case or whatever. This audio is quite good. But so it creates this sense of doubt if there's a disconnect. You know, you want the whole thing to seem as professional and cohesive as possible.
Yeah, thank you for that. And in a second, we'll move on sort of to some more specifics, giving people lots to think about. But another example is that I've had the same thing with websites before, where I've heard about a product or a company, or maybe I've seen it on Amazon and I thought, oh, I'll just go and check out their website.
Right.
And the website, either you can tell it hasn't been updated since 2017, or it doesn't work particularly well for whatever reason. And it automatically gives you a much more negative view of the product. And actually the product could be absolutely amazing, but that's something that I am, I'll be honest, I am a bit put off by, is if the website doesn't look great. And I don't know why, and I don't know if that's a bit judgy of me, and I certainly don't mean to do that.
I think it's because we all want to know that the business is still active. I think that there's a really simple kind of you know, questioning that goes through the mind when you're buying something. And you know, maybe even especially in light of the pandemic that we've had, we want to know that the businesses are still active, and you know, that it's not just that we're going to place an order on something like Amazon and it's even maybe outdated, or we're going to get old stock. What if you bought something and you need to reach customer service? You know, I think that all of these things, we want to know that it's reliability, basically.
Thank you. And I should point out that we have got a previous episode all about websites as well. I'm going to link to in the show notes. So hopefully we're not overwhelming everyone, Cara, because I think we've given people lots to think about.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yes, no. Lots to think about. It is actually very simple principles when you understand it. You know, for me, I work in it, so I just geek out on the detail, you know. But I do really think that some simple things like laying foundation, understanding your audience, and then, you know, I think some of these things, they have a huge impact. And just like you said before, it might seem like a lot of decisions, but it's kind of like buying or creating a capsule wardrobe and then not really having to think about what you put on each day and knowing that it works. Because once you have made all of these decisions, you know, a lot of small businesses, they do every single time they have to create a leaflet or a flyer or a social media post. They're going to somewhere like Canva, and that's like a huge, huge library of temptation and new interesting things with animation and all these different effects. And actually that's where you can waste time and also lose your brand by being inconsistent. And actually just having all these rules in place does make life a lot easier.
Yeah, I can even from my own point of view, I can definitely see that. And thank you. And I do think it's good actually to go into all of this detail, because I just think it gets you sort of thinking, especially if you sort of come into this thinking about a logo being a brand and some colours maybe. So I hope this has been helpful. But let's talk through some more sort of practical things now, if that's okay, Cara.
Absolutely.
And I will come back to Canva later as well, because I love Canva and I'm sure you can give us some good tips on that.
Yeah, sure.
So at what point, so let's say you're listening to this because you're thinking about creating a product, you're in the stages of creating a product, so very early on, at what point should you be thinking about your brand and your branding?
So that's a great question. So I think as early as possible, but only once you know your audience and sort of how your product fits within your competitors. I think that's a great place, because if you start thinking about it early, it really is it's a process that can help you with that launch of that first product. And the moment that you're out there, you know, I guess if you're basically doing market research and you're still finding your audience, then it's not as important at that point. But at the moment that you want to sell it, people will expect some kind of brand. And it's better to be able to have allowed yourself a few weeks for the process rather than having to just quickly get something done on, you know, speedily online, because then you're just going to have to redo it in a few months. And so I think, basically, I think when you know who your audience is going to be and you know at least what your first product is going to be and roughly what you want to price it at, then I think you're well informed to start thinking about your brand at least. If you want, you know, I do think it's absolutely fine if you want to start trading, make a bit of money before you invest, if it's a bigger cost, you know. But also I would caveat that by saying that I don't know that many businesses who've been able to be financially successful before they've had a good brand in place.
That makes sense. Thank you. And I've actually got two follow-up questions. The first thing is, I suppose it makes sense, completely sense what you're saying, because I think that knowing who your audience is and knowing sort of who your product's for is kind of part of the product creation process as well. So hopefully something people are doing really early on. And then I think it also ties into things like your marketing. So if you know who you're aiming at and what, you know, is it an aspirational brand or is it like a everyday brand or whatever? I think knowing those things up front, kind of, it all sort of ties together, doesn't it? So it completely makes sense to think it through at those early stages. And then the question I have, I guess, is does branding and need to be expensive? Because I guess that is one reason people might not do it at the outset, is they're a bit worried about sort of what the investment would be.
No, it doesn't need to be expensive, but what it is I definitely don't think for any of the logo creators online or any of the DIY tools are worthwhile for creating a logo unless you happen to basically be a graphic designer with a very strong and clear direction. And even then, there's problems with them. And so the reason that you're spending is just because you're spending on somebody skilled and their time. But no, I mean, it's a vast range of different costs out there depending on the designer. But I do think it is something that is worth investing in, and this isn't with any kind of ulterior motive at all. It's actually, you know, the business model that I work in is actually not really that profitable, because we do something once for a business and then they use it for years and years and years. Some of the businesses I've done branding for have been using it 8 years, 9 years later. I've only been doing this 9 years, so I've yet to see one go over a decade. But when, for example, when we create branding, we're always thinking 5 years. So it's something you're investing in for the long term. If however, and I do completely appreciate, you know, when you're a startup, sometimes it's not always possible to, you know, put more money in, then the likelihood then, though, is if you do something with the budget you have on day one and with the intention of coming back to it after a year, which is really common. And a lot of my clients have been people I've rebranded because they didn't do it professionally to begin, then that's absolutely fine. But I think that you have already spent that year building up that brand image, and you're spending all that time posting on social media or creating packaging. So there's some logistical costs, like how many times do you really want to get stickers and tissue and boxes printed? You know, so it actually does work out as a saving if you are in a position that you can. But you know, I think the best thing as well is to be really upfront with a designer. If you find a graphic designer or somebody that could, you know, a brand designer, and you want to work with them, find out their prices. And if that takes you a few months to save up to, then that's absolutely fine. But then when you do go to somebody, be transparent about your price rather than trying to haggle, because you're going to get the best work from that person. And I know this just I've worked for so many years with graphic designers, and I know that in general, they are people that really, really want to help small businesses, and they love being brought in on a project as exciting as a new business early. It's really, really exciting creatively. And so if you can give them, if you can be honest about what your budget is, and if your budget isn't quite their normal rate, if you could be really flexible about time and give them some creative rein, they're likely to go above and beyond for you. So actually, there's sort of three variables rather than it just being money. Actually, time's a really big one, because the number of people who come and say, oh, well, we've only got, you know, X amount of money and we need it in 2 weeks because we're doing this huge trade fair and it needs to be, you know, in vector format so we can print it XYZ. That really does put a gun against somebody's head, because this process takes a bit longer. If you can, if your budget is a bit lower, I'd definitely say approach someone earlier and be really flexible about time. And then they can work it around their other projects. And I honestly, I don't think I've met a single graphic designer who hasn't been willing to help a small business out that way.
Oh, that's really reassuring to know. Thank you. I think that's, hopefully that's really helpful for people.
Yeah, definitely.
And let's say you are starting out and you have got a smaller budget. What's the bare minimum you can do when it comes to your branding? So what are the key decisions you have to make and the key things you have to have? Because I'm assuming, I'm assuming, actually I don't know this, Cara, but I'm thinking from the outset, there's probably things that you have to have and things that are more nice to have and good to have.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I mean, you're going to need to have a logo. You know, branding isn't all about the logo, but logo is fairly central. So you are definitely going to need to have a logo, and you may need to have two versions of that logo so that you have a version that fits in small spaces like social media, and a version that works on your website. So frequently you might have a version on your website that is more horizontal because there's more space on the website for that. But then if you were to put that on social media, it might crop off at the sides, or it would be too small to read on like a Facebook profile image that's cropped in a circle. So you sometimes have a shorthand version of the logo, or a version that works in a square slash circle space. And I think you also need to have you need a color palette. And actually this is my not so secret tip, because I always tell everybody, but I think if you do one thing, if you you know, it's, yeah, I think basically if you do one thing, it's try and pick a color that will help you stand out. So do look a bit at your competitors. So I'm assuming if this is you doing it sort of on a shoestring, doing it a bit yourself, then you'd be doing this process yourself. If not, then the graphic designer would be doing this. But look at your competitors and try and see if there are any patterns in terms of the colors and styles they use, and deliberately go against the grain. Now, obviously it still has to work for your audience. So if your audience, you know, if everything's pastel because you're selling to mums, baby wear, then going against the grain might be black, but not be suitable for them. So it's obviously got to be within the context of knowing and understanding your audience and thinking of them foremost. But if you can find a way to stand out in some way, that's obviously going to be an advantage. So having a limited color palette could be helpful. So you don't need to have, you see things on Pinterest and they have sort of 5, 6, 7 different colors. Yes, it's helpful to have some other, you know, more subdued colors for packaging and website backgrounds and things like that. But those are really much more advanced considerations in keeping it simple. You basically just need one main color and maybe one accent to that color. If you think about, well, I mentioned Selfridges before, you know, with their bright yellow. If you think of Harrods with their green, and obviously then they have the gold for the lettering, but you think of Coca-Cola and they're just red and white, sort of the same with Virgin Media. You think about these brands that we really know, and some of the time they just use one main color as the lead, and that actually helps us remember them. So don't feel that you need to have a really complicated color palette. And finally, you probably need to decide on a font, just so that you're fairly consistent. And that's the main thing, really. So again, it is great to work with a graphic designer, because graphic designers are able to look at different fonts and say, that looks premium, that looks heritage, that looks friendly. And these are kind of you know, to be able to look at different typefaces and to understand the personalities that those might create might not be a natural skill set for every entrepreneur. But it's basically at least making a decision on one and using that would be a bare minimum, I would say.
Thank you for that. And I'm assuming that for anyone who's on a bit of a budget or even someone who wants to sort of have more of an active role in this, looking at fonts and colours is something you can do yourself. Even if you plan to work with a graphic designer, you could go to them and say, I like this font, I like this colour or these colours, to give them something to start with.
Yeah, it's a really fun process. I mean, if you are a bit artsy or visual and you enjoy that, it can be really fun to be quite collaborative. But I would just always explain why you like things, because there's nothing worse than being told, oh, you know, we want it to be purple, we want a heart, and then sort of you question that, because the, you know, at least my job is always to question in order to create the best possible outcome. And so, you know, I worked with several beauty salons before and they all told me purple and silver or purple and gold. And it was because it was almost just subliminally, that's what they were drawn to, or that's what they were personally drawn to as individuals. But if everyone goes for that, then obviously it makes it incredibly difficult to differentiate. So if you say why you like things, like, I like this font, maybe you can't even put your finger on it. You say, I like this font, I'm not quite sure why, but it seems simple and contemporary, or I like it, it doesn't seem pretentious, or I like it because it looks quite fancy. Even if you don't have the full lexicon, it's fine. Just that's really, really helpful to a designer. And that's roughly what you're looking for. If you are picking your own colors and your own fonts, you've looked at your competitors, and this might, as you say, have been part of your product development journey, not even your branding journey, but you have thought about who your customer is, you've looked at your competitors, and you've worked out how you want your brand to kind of sit within that. And you might say, well, I want our brand to be really good quality items, but really down to earth, you know, and look at some of the brands that inspire you. Might be like, oh, you know, so I'm just thinking of your business now, you might be like, oh, you know, I like Innocent Smoothies because they seem really down to earth, but you know that they use good quality ingredients and they're eco. So that might be like a reference for you. So you can kind of think, yeah, I want us to be, you know, down to earth and friendly, and that might affect the color choices. So you might say, okay, I want the language to be really down to earth, and I want the fonts to be kind of unpretentious but friendly. So you might go for quite rounded forms, you might go for quite bright uplifting colors. So you could see how it all marries together.
Yeah, definitely, thank you. And actually something you said got me thinking then is, do people, or can people fall into the trap of picking sort of colours that they like, but actually they're not their target audience? Do you see that happening where people say, oh, I as a person like purple, or I like yellow? I can see that that could be quite an easy thing to do. In fact, I think I've probably done that before.
I see that all the time. All the time. When you're a solo entrepreneur or part of a small team, it's very easy because it's your baby. So of course it's personal. But I think, you know, what I say is I try to pretty much get every client to give me license for a blank slate, if it's at all possible, because otherwise you can often get hired and they say, I want to invest in my branding for XYZ, but then they're kind of giving you direction that takes you back to exactly where they are, because it's their comfort zone. And sometimes it happens, sometimes it's a very strange phenomenon, but sometimes the branding looks too good and it creates a sense of insecurity that they're not at that level and they need to look more amateur. And it's a very strange phenomenon. I know that sounds mad, but I've had that where people have thought, oh, it looks too slick and I'm only a one-man band. And it's like, well, no, because we want your business to be successful. And we, you know, not everybody needs to know it was made at your kitchen table. Obviously, it's not lying or anything. It's just making it look good. But in terms of the color, I had, it's not always purple, by the way, but there was a client that I worked with and we did a discovery, and she was running, so it wasn't product business, it was service, but they were doing data analysis, and all of the audience was middle-aged corporate men in quite senior positions. That's mostly who she was dealing with. And because she was an all-female team, she'd gone out with purple because it was her personal favorite color. And that absolutely made sense. But we actually did two things. We looked at the market, and actually, because purple's quite close to blue and blue is a color for tech, there were some purpley blue gradients and lots of blue in the marketplace. And all of her audience was male, and it was actually holding them back a bit and making them look not quite as professional. And so, and there's, you know, nothing to do with it being a feminine color. It was because it wasn't standing out enough or attracting the audience. So what I usually do is say, you have to think most about your audience and your marketplace, but then I'm happy to concede to choose a color that is one that you don't hate. So obviously, yeah, it's your business, so you don't want to see something you hate every single day. You know, that particular client, she didn't really like yellow. That was the color I pitched as being the best standout opportunity for her. So we went for more of an orange, and that's fine because she has to see it every day. And if she prefers orange to yellow, then that's great. That's fine. But it is important in the journey that you're slightly detaching your own personal taste and thinking about your business and what's going to help it the most.
That's really helpful, thank you, because I can see that can be really hard. And I think, I know this podcast is obviously about products, but I think particularly if you're selling sort of maybe handmade products, so they're very personal to you, or even if you're selling services, then in your businesses, you are your business. I guess it can be really tempting to just put your personality all over everything. And I suppose there needs to be some element of that, but also keeping in mind that it has to appeal to whoever you're trying to appeal to. So that's, yeah,
exactly. It's really interesting. I think one of the things that's nice about brand as well is it can actually provide a quite helpful boundary, because when you are your business, it can feel really overwhelming, and you can actually feel like you lost your identity a bit to being this business that has to always be visible on social media and things like that. And actually having a brand, it creates a bit of a framework. You can say, no, that's the business and this is me, and they're different, but there's crossover. I personally found that very helpful when I set up my business anyway.
That's really nice way to think of it. Thank you. And I think that leads on really nicely to my next question, which is, what's the difference between branding products to branding services? Or is there a difference between branding products and services? And is there anything specifically we need to think about when we're thinking about a products brand?
So there are lots of similarities, and my process anyway is pretty much exactly the same to begin with. But I think when it comes to naming, that's a really big consideration. So I think when you're naming a product business, you should try to brainstorm what your niche is, rather than what your product is. Because if you name something, like for example, if you make candles and you put candles in the business name, it obviously massively limits what you can produce. So I'd say your products are your products, but your brand is bigger. So if you are, so basically that's just one of my number one rules, is trying not to put the product name into the business name unless they are 100% totally committed and never want to grow bigger than that type of product. But if you create a brand name that doesn't have the product name in, it allows you all those freedoms. So you know, you could create something that was more like homeware or fragrance rather than just candles, and then if you want to create diffusers or whatever it might be, then, you know, trinket pots or whatever that all relate to this, then you've got a brand that enables that, and you're not going to have to change your URL or your social media handles, your, you know, your logo or anything like that. So yeah, I think, and I mean, that's what you did. You didn't name your business after the product. You named it something and made the visual clear that it sits within that children's and baby product category, didn't you?
Yes, I did. And although so we haven't actually talked about name, and I guess that is a good part of your brand. I mean, because my brand's called Tiny Chipmunk, which people, I guess people might make the leap to thinking it's children's products, or they might not. But is there anything in particular we need to think about when naming a product business, other than what you've mentioned before, sort of not putting the product in the title, which I think is a really good idea and one I hadn't actually thought about, because like you say, lots of businesses do expand their niche slightly. Is there anything else to think about?
Oh, so much. Let me think. No, naming. I have a guide on my website actually about naming, but I think the thing with naming is you don't have to describe exactly what you do. I'd say that's pretty important. And there are things that you can have a statement underneath, you know, it could be a tagline, or it could just be something you put on your packaging, or that you have at the bottom of your emails. It doesn't have to always sit beneath the logo, but you can have something that is makes clearer what it is if your brand name's more abstract. So I think that's really useful, because people do need to know what it is. So, you know, with something like Tiny Chipmunk, you have to make very clear. So I'm sure you say something like, you know, bamboo quality, or, you know, sustainable babies bowls or children's wear or whatever it might be. Because I think then having a phrase like that is helpful, because it helps people understand what it is. But not having that in your brand name really does free you up. I'm trying to think of any other really quick one tip, but I mean, basically, there's a website that's really handy that I use a lot called namevine.com. So I would say when you are naming, have a look on there to see whether your name is available as a domain and social media handles, because it's as ideal. I know it's difficult in this day and age to get exactly the social media handle, but if at all possible, then try and avoid things like underscores and adding numbers to it. I'd have a preference for adding a word like official or we are to the front. So something like we are Tiny Chipmunk, or Tiny Chipmunk official, or Tiny Chipmunk baby, or something like that would be better than adding underscores and ones or things like that. Because yeah, I think you want to make it look as professional as possible. And some of those things make quite clear that you were pipped to the post on a particular name. So yeah, that would be my other tip.
Thank you for that. And I think the URL thing is obviously really important. I can't even remember what it was. I think it was going to be Little Chipmunk rather than Tiny Chipmunk. Tiny Chipmunk wasn't actually my first name, but the domain that I wanted was taken.
Right.
So I had to sort of rethink it a little bit. And that's a really good point. And I guess also looking that there's no one in your niche with a name that's really similar to yours.
Yeah.
Because I guess that could cause confusion, you know, if there was someone called Little Chipmunk and someone recommended them. What I mean is you could easily get confused, couldn't you, and recommend the wrong product, or could possibly even get sort of sued, can't you, if your name is too close to someone else's?
I'd say the bigger consideration is what you said. If you see that some of the other domains aren't available, but they're just parked, there's no content on them, or they're very, very clearly instantly very different services or products, so that there's no chance of confusion, then I'd say that's green light, you can go. Because obviously in an ideal world, then nobody would have anything at all similar, but it's not realistic, you know, for that to happen. But do be careful if you have something and you even just searching it on Facebook and seeing all the other pages that come up. If there are lots that come up and they're all within the same kind of niche or industry, then if you see lots of options, then your customers are going to. So it could be confusing.
Thank you. Because I guess it all comes back to what you said right at the beginning about being memorable. And I suppose if there's someone who's got almost the identical name to you, then you're not memorable straight away.
And you don't want to have to spend all of your time saying to people, oh, we're this one, not that one.
Yes. I've spoken to people who've said things like that before, and that must be and I have
it must
thought,
be such
maybe
a
change your name
for them. Exactly. They must have to say that every time, and it must grate away at them every time,
and that must be really hard. So let's think, where should we go to now? I don't know what we could talk about actually, Cara, is as you know, I help lots of people get started on Amazon. That's the main thing I do now, is help people launch and sell their products on Amazon. Amazon is obviously slightly different when it comes to branding and your brand, because the platform and the marketplace isn't yours, you're just putting your products on there. So are there any different branding decisions or different things to think about if you plan to sell your products on Amazon or perhaps any third party marketplace? Because you'll know as a customer that obviously you might, unless the brand is really visible. Yeah. I can't tell you the name of every company I bought from in Amazon in the last month.
No,
probably.
Way.
I can tell you either. Some, but yeah. But not all. So what do we have to do if we're selling on Amazon to make ourselves more visible?
Yeah, I think honestly, it is a challenge. So I think that what you said earlier about having a presence outside of that website, that third-party website, whether it's Amazon or Etsy or not on the high street, whatever it might be, is really important. So having your own website, having your own social media, so that somebody, most of the time, especially on Amazon, people probably won't do that, take that step and go and look. But if they do, that everything looks really professional and consistent, it's a really good thing to do. And then the second thing I would say is just take every opportunity that is afforded to you within that platform to apply some visual branding. But don't just shove your logo everywhere, because when somebody's buying a product, it's very important that the listing is all about that product and its benefits. But that I often see product listings, and rather than just having photographs of the product, some of them are more like graphical images. So they might have measurements or a badge saying 12-year guarantee, or I don't know why I said 12, that's a very random number, but you know, but
great
they
guarantee.
Might don't know why I said that anyway, but you sometimes see that if you're looking at something, they might show you the scale of something or the depth of something, or they might show you an image of somebody wearing or using that product. Those are all also kind of brand touch points. Even if it's not just your logo, it's building up your brand. And there are opportunities as well for that to feature your logo in the corner, or well, sorry, I'm not sure about Amazon, but there are, you can have your fonts at least and your colors, so it could be fairly consistent. And then there are, I'm not sure what scale you have to be to qualify, but there are those, you know, the shop pages within Amazon, there are some opportunities there for some branding, aren't there?
There are. So if you
I would say use those.
If your brand is a registered trademark or wordmark in the in the UK or whatever marketplace you want to sell on, you can apply for something called Amazon Brand Registry. I recommend this to most of my clients, because to apply for the brand registry part on Amazon is free. Mm-hmm. And to register your trademark or wordmark, depending on what you have, isn't actually that expensive. I did it years ago and I can't remember the exact cost, but it's let's say it's under £100. It's not a massive cost. Mm-hmm. And that's when you can have a store page, and then you can have a bit more information about your brand there. And I guess my advice to clients is to try and make that replicate their website as much as possible. So if someone does go over to their website, it looks like the same thing and people go, oh, this must be right because the colours are the same or the fonts are the same.
Exactly. That's what I think, that's a great point. Yeah, definitely well worth taking that opportunity. And there are, you know, you don't, I mean, you can trademark on your own, but there are also some companies I know, I work with a couple of lawyers that help small businesses with trademarking. But it is just something you can do yourself as well, as you said. But if that process is a bit complicated, there are also some people that can broker that process for you.
Oh, that's good to know. Thank you. And I guess, and I know I asked the question, so I probably shouldn't be giving an answer, but another bit of advice I'll give about Amazon, if that's okay, is that when I'm working with clients on their listings, I always try, if I'm writing their listing for them, I always try and add sort of some of their brand personality into that listing.
Yeah.
So it reads like it's written, you know, so just to make it a bit more unique and not the same as everyone else out there. So if you were looking to do it yourself, I would say take the time to think about writing in a voice that feels authentic to you, while of course they're also following all the other requirements for an Amazon listing, which I know is a bit of a minefield. But you know, don't just copy what every other competitor, we never copy what anyone else is listing anyway, but don't feel that your listing has to be exactly the same as all of the other products in your niche. Just make yours stand out a little bit.
I think brands can really come across in other ways as well that aren't as visual, just like you were saying with Amazon, because when a brand takes the time to reply to any of the questions asked on the page, I always think that looks really good. But sometimes with the visuals, sometimes you see that they will make a brand promise. So I might not have heard of them, but if you're looking for something, like I was looking for a backpack, right? And then I went to the page and it was a Swiss company, I think, and their promise was that they, you know, creating hard wearing, functional, sustainable luggage since whatever date it was. And then I was like, oh right, these are basically like really serious luggage specialists, so I can trust that all of these are going to be really good quality. You know, it's not just knocked up in a factory in China. You know, it's like, this is their brand promise, so this is their specialism. And so that actually engenders trust.
Yeah, definitely. And I think this sounds really basic, but if you're looking to sell on Amazon or any other marketplace, or even on your own website, I just think having really well-written text and nice photos goes a long way. You know, if your product listing's full of spelling mistakes and your photos look a bit amateur, or like you know, I've seen a few examples where I'm pretty sure they're like stock photos, you know, like from the manufacturer's catalogue or something. I just think that gives not the best impression. It doesn't mean someone wouldn't, it depends what you're buying. I mean, if depending on what you're looking to buy, it doesn't necessarily mean someone won't buy it if it's the right price, particularly if it's your product. And you know, it's all about creating a great impression, isn't it? And I do think that people listening to this have got great products, and so you want to put it in the best light possible. So I think all of those really small things all add up.
Yeah, I think as well, definitely all of those things are really helpful. And there's nothing wrong with using stock imagery if you don't have the budget to go and do a photo shoot, but just, you know, be mindful of not using what other people have used, or just as you said, don't use just what the manufacturer had provided, because I think that comes across as just being an upload rather than a considered bit of information. I think photography is definitely, I mean, when we were talking about the iceberg, that's one of the things. If we're talking about everything that's visible about your branding, then photography is definitely one of them as well. So if you can get some good quality product photos, that would be great. And if you are able to do video, if that's relevant to your product, giving a demonstration or doing a 360 of it, I always find those incredibly useful just as a consumer when I'm looking to buy something.
Yeah, and that's also a really good point as well. Thank you. That sometimes sort of thinking like a consumer can be really helpful as well, because I think we all know what we like and don't like and trust and don't trust when we're shopping. So I guess it's also sort of remembering that when you're the one with something to sell as well.
Yeah, definitely. Always think like a consumer. And you know, you can always just send it to a few people, but without prompting them whatsoever. You know, it's difficult though if they know you, because they know you and love you and they're just going to say nice things. But you know, you can, if you don't prompt them too much, you could, you know, see their feedback, or even just watch how somebody is on screen with your product listing or your website, you know, and then ask them some questions like, was it really clear what the product was? Was it clear what the benefits were? Was it clear what you'd be getting for the price? You know, just to make sure that those basic things are addressed is very important.
Thank you. And I've just got a few more questions for you, finish up, if that's okay, Cara.
Yeah, absolutely.
And the first one, and I'm sort of changing the subject slightly, you mentioned Canva earlier as a tool, and I just thought I'd ask, is there anything that you can do yourself in Canva? Have you got any hints and tips of how people can use it? I'm thinking possibly once you've got your branding in place, rather than when you're looking to create your branding. But is there anything that once you've got your brand that you can do to make things a bit easier when it comes to creating posts or content or whatever you're doing?
Oh goodness, yes, absolutely. So I would say the only time I would ever recommend using Canva to create a logo would be if you are in the very, very, very early stages, that you haven't started trading really yet and you're still testing the market, then fine, you can work up something. But otherwise, I would say it's not really the best platform for creating a logo for a number of reasons, not least the fact that you only end up with a 500 by 500 pixel flat image rather than something vectorized and something that you can have copyright ownership of. So from a copyright point of view, it's not as good to create on there. But I think, yeah, what you're saying is more about if you have got a logo created, then absolutely. I use Canva all the time and I use it for my clients too, because it's super helpful. You know, often when we're creating a brand, we will create them a couple of social media templates too, so that life is much easier for them. So one of my favorite things about Canva is if you have Canva Pro, if you have the free one, you can set up some limited colors as well. But if you have Canva Pro, you can basically upload all of your logo files, put in your brand fonts and your color palette, and it will bring that in as shortcuts on every single template. So if you then add text, it will add it in your brand font. So I think that's a really useful tool. But the second thing would just be, I would think about the kinds of posts you need to make on social media and basically go and create a little suite of those posts. So yes, okay, in the first instance, you might need things like Facebook cover images and things to present your business, your brand. It might need to have your URL, some images of your products or whatever it might be, and your branding. So creating those, that's helpful because then that's just something you can use. But creating something that you can continually use, like a social media post template, and creating maybe two or three of those, saying, okay, I'm going to need one which is FAQs about the product, I'm going to need one which is customer reviews of the product, and I'm going to need one with a discount or a sale or a special or an announcement. And then between that, I'm going to be using product photos or customer with product photos. So these three templates will be enough, or ID4 or whatever it might be. Going and thinking about those and creating them together is quite useful if you're able, because then you know that they're going to look similar to each other. And you know, earlier you said it could be a bit overwhelming, but actually I think a lot of branding is very simple. And one of the simplest things is just be consistent. So like you said, that you would encourage your clients to create their Amazon listing as if it was a mini version of their website so that the two tally up. That's exactly what the human brain wants. We just want reassurance that something is what we expect it to be. And consistency is one of the best ways to do that. So I would say that, yeah, using it to create a few social media templates, it also then, it makes life easier and makes you more consistent. And try, if possible, and I know it's difficult because Canva keep releasing new exciting goodies, but try if possible to not get too distracted by all of the new things and templates, the ready-made templates on there, because those by definition don't relate to your brand.
Yeah, that makes sense. Thank you. I guess, could you though, if you wanted to, the play devil's advocate here, use some of those templates but sort of swap out your colours and your fonts and things?
Oh yeah, absolutely. Like yeah, totally. It's just make sure that you almost have a bit of a checklist, that if you use a template, you go, okay, I like this one, but I'm going to swap, you know, the font for my font, the colors for my colors, the texture for my texture or my logo or whatever it might be. And I think just, I'd say fonts is the biggest one I see. People tend to be fairly consistent with color, but then they sort of play around with fonts because they haven't really settled on one. And every new template has, some of them have beautiful script handwriting style and they look more like, you know, a diary entry and more boho, and then others are more bold. And I often see that people sort of switch between lots of them. So try to limit how many you do would be the most important thing, I'd say.
That's really helpful. Thank you. So I know that I'm sort of keeping an eye on the time here, Cara, so I know we haven't got long left. So I know, thank you so much, but I should say, first of all, for everything you shared with us today, because it's been just so, so helpful. Oh, and I know how passionate you are about helping people in the like really early stages with their branding. And you mentioned earlier that you've created some tools to help people who are in these stages. Do you want to just tell us a little bit about what you've created and where people can find them?
Yeah, definitely. Thank you. So I'm so pleased about this because it's been a long time coming in my business. I've been wanting to do something like this and I didn't quite know how or have the time to create them, but I've now created a website, so a second brand, which is called brandingmadesimple.co.uk. And there I'm creating a suite of different templates and mini tutorials and workshops on specific parts of the branding journey. And it's specifically designed for people who are in the early stage of their business and maybe doing this on a shoestring or a small budget, or maybe even trying to DIY some elements of it. So I've tried to distill as much of our process that I would use with one-to-one clients into these templates. And the first one that's launching is actually so important because I thought I should definitely start with audience. So the first one is the ideal audience kit. So it helps you define who your audience is and then to really get to know them. Because that's such a foundation for all of your marketing and your brands. So I'm really proud about that one. So yeah, and I have created a discount actually for anybody who's listening to the podcast. So you'll get a discount on any of the items on the shop if you use the code Vicky20.
Oh, thank you so much. That's so kind of you. And I will make sure that goes in the show notes as well. So if anyone's sort of walking or exercising or something now, they can go back to it. Thank you so much. It's really kind of you to do that. And I think you're right. These tools will be really helpful for people as well. And I guess it also means like you can help more people because I suppose there's only so much you can do one-to-one as well.
Yeah, that's it. That's always the motivation that sat behind my business for me, is how I can help as many small businesses as possible with these tools and with these tricks, because it's not as intuitive to everybody, and everybody's got complementary skill sets. So if you're creating a business, I really admire that, and I'd love to be able to, you know, help you with my skill set, but trying to make it as simple as possible.
Thank you. I think that's brilliant. Thank you so much, Carl. I've just got one more really quick question, which is, and I think this is going to be a hard one to answer, if you had to pick one sort of key branding tip that you want people to go away with now, because now we're at the end, one thing you want them to remember, what would it be?
Oh, that's so interesting. I would say that think about your customers first and foremost and try to find ways to solve their problems and delight them, because then your brand will definitely be a success within those groups. So the thing about trying to answer their problems will help you with developing other products. And that's why maybe having a name that's broader than just a specific product, it is good, because you may branch out to other things. And I think in terms of delighting them, that's something I always love. So it's just about the little touches that show that you care all the way through the journey. So it's little things like having a thank you note in packaging can be helpful. And sometimes even people will handwrite that or sign it themselves. And that's a really nice touch. Or if you give, a discount to loyal customers, anything like that, just basically championing your customer and trying to be there for them and delight them, I think is really key to an effective brand.
Thank you. I think that's great advice as of running your business as well. So thank you for that. That's so helpful. And thank you again for everything that you shared. Thank you for the discount, which will be linked in the show notes. And thank you so much for your time.
Thank you. I've really enjoyed it. Thanks.
Hi, thank you so much for listening. As always, I would absolutely love to know what you thought of this episode. Please do remember to rate and review the show, and also, most importantly, subscribe so you don't miss out on any future episodes. And as a reminder, I release a new episode every single Friday. So take care and look forward to speaking to you again then. Hi, this is just a little note. So if you've enjoyed this episode, or indeed any of the episodes, and you would like to, buy me a coffee or something, you can actually now leave tips. So there's a link to how to do this in the show note. Of course, do not feel obliged to do this. This is a free podcast. This will always be a free podcast. But as I say, if you want to buy me a coffee, you can do that via the link in the show notes.